Then death set me down in a high place from which I could see the world like a shining round shield in the blue sea of the heavens. I saw all men and all creatures who have ever lived. Like a mighty river, time ran backwards before mine eyes. For 100,000 years I watched their strivings and their deaths. I watched all men go from death and old age to infancy and birth. Time became more and more remote, going back until the birth of the first man and the first woman. I watched them at the moment of their birth and then before. At last there were no men upon the earth, and only the gods existed. Yet still the river of time flowed back beyond the time of the gods, into none, into the time of darkness and primordial chaos. The river of time could flow no further back, and so reversed itself. Time began to run forward, in the manner that was familiar to me from my days of life upon the earth, and I watched the passion of the gods played out before me. My audience were all of them well versed in the theology of our pantheon, but none of them had ever heard the mysteries presented in such a novel fashion. They sat silent and enthralled as I went on. Out of the chaos and darkness of none rose Amon-Ra, he who creates himself. I watched Amon-Ra stroke his generative member, masturbating and spurting out his seminal seed in mighty waves that left the silver smear that we know as the Milky Way across the dark void. From the seed were generated Geb and Nuut, the earth and the heaven. Bacha! A single voice broke the tremulous silence of the temple. Bacha! Amen! The old abbot had not been able to contain himself, and now he endorsed my vision of the creation. I was so astonished by his change of heart that I almost forgot my next line. After all, he had been my sternest critic up to that time. I had won him over completely, and my voice soared in triumph. Geb and Nut coupled and copulated, as man and women do, and from their dreadful union were born the gods Osiris and Seth, and the goddesses Isis and Nephthys. I made a wild gesture, and the linen curtains were drawn slowly aside, to reveal the fantasy world that I had created. Nothing like this had ever been seen in Egypt before, and the audience gasped with amazement. With measured tread I withdrew, and my place upon the stage was taken by the god Osiris. The audience recognized him instantly by the tall bottle-shaped headdress, by his arms crossed over his chest, and by the crook and the flail he held before him. Every household kept his statuette in the family shrine. A droning cry of reverence went up from every throat, and indeed the sedative that I had ministered to Todd glittered weirdly in his eyes and gave him a strange, unearthly presence that was convincingly godlike. With the crook and the flail, Osiris made mystical gestures and declaimed in sonorous tones, "Behold Artur, the river!" Once more the audience rustled and murmured as they recognized the Nile. The Nile was Egypt and the center of the world. "Bacha!" another voice called out, and watching from my hidden place amongst the pillars, I was astonished and delighted as I realized who had spoken. It was Pharaoh. My play had both secular and divine endorsement. I was certain that from now on mine would become the authorized version, replacing the 1,000-year-old original. I had found my place in immortality. My name would live on down the millennium. Joyfully I signalled for the cistern to be opened, and the waters began to flow across our stage. At first the audience did not comprehend, and then they realized that they were actually witnessing the revelation of the great river, and a shout went up from 1,000 throats, "Bacha! Bacha!" "Behold, the waters rise!" cried Osiris, and obediently the Nile was swollen by the inundation. "Behold, the waters fall!" cried the god, and they shrank at his command. "Now they will rise again!" I had arranged for buckets of dye to be added to the water as it poured out of the cistern at the rear of the temple. First a green dye to simulate the low water period, and then, as it rose again, a darker dye that faithfully emulated the colour of the silt-laden waters of the high inundation. "Now behold the insects and birds upon the earth," ordered Osiris, and the cages at the rear of the stage were opened, and a shrieking, chattering, swirling cloud of wild birds and gorgeously coloured butterflies filled the temple. The watchers were like children. enchanted and enthralled, reaching up to snatch the butterflies from the air and then release them again to fly out between the high pillars of the temple. One of the wild birds, a long-billed hoopoe, marvellously patterned in colours of white and cinnamon and black, flew down unafraid and settled on Pharaoh's crown. The crowd was delighted. "An omen," they cried, "a blessing on the king. May he live for ever." And Pharaoh smiled. It was naughty of me, but afterwards I hinted to my lord Intef that I had trained the bird to single out Pharaoh, and although it was, of course, quite impossible, he believed me. Such is my reputation with animals and birds. On the stage, Osiris wandered through the paradise that he had created, and the mood was set for the dramatic moment when, with a blood-chilling shriek, Seth bounded onto the stage. Although they had been expecting it, still the powerful and hideous presence shocked the audience, and the women screamed and covered their faces, only to peer out again from between trembling fingers. "What is it you have done, brother?" Seth bellowed in jealous rage. "Do you set yourself above me? Am I not also a god? Do you hold all creation to yourself alone, that I, your brother, may not share it with you?" Osiris answered him calmly, his dignity remote and cool as the drug held him in its thrall. "Our father, Amon-Ra, has given it to us both. However, he has also given us the right to choose how we dispose of it, for good or for evil." The words that I had put into the mouth of the god reverberated through the temple. They were the finest that I had written, and the audience hung upon them. However, I alone of all of them knew what was coming, and the beauty and the power of my own composition was soured as I steeled myself for it. Osiris drew to the close of his speech. "This is the world as I have revealed it. If you wish to share it in peace and brotherly love, then you are welcome. However, if you come in warlike rage, if evil and hatred fill your heart, then I order you gone." He lifted his right arm, all draped in the gleaming diaphanous linen of his robe, and pointed the way for Seth to leave the paradise of earth. Seth hunched those huge, hairy shoulders like a buffalo bull, and he bellowed so that the spittle flew from his lips in a cloud that was flavoured by the rotting teeth in his jaws. I could smell it from where I stood. He lifted high the bronze broadsword and rushed at his brother. This had never been rehearsed, and it took Osiris completely by surprise. He stood with his right arm still outstretched, and the blade hissed with the power of the stroke as it swung down. The hand was lopped off at the wrist as cleanly as I would prune a shoot from the vine that grows over my terrace. It fell at Osiris's feet and lay there with the fingers fluttering feebly. The surprise was so complete, and the sword so sharp that for a long moment Osiris did not move, except to sway slightly on his feet. The audience must have believed that this was another theatrical trick, and that the fallen hand was a dummy. The blood did not come at once, which lulled them further. They were intensely interested, but not alarmed, until suddenly Osiris reeled back, and with a dreadful cry clutched at the stump of his lower arm. Only then did the blood burst out between his fingers, and sprayed down his white robe, staining it like spilt wine. Still clutching his stump, Osiris staggered across the stage and began to scream. That scream, high and clear with mortal agony, broke the mood of the spectators' complacency. They knew then for the first time that what they were witnessing was not make-believe, but they were trapped in horrified silence. Before Osiris could reach the edge of the stage, Seth came bounding after him on those thick bow legs. He seized the stump of Osiris' arm and used it as a handle to drag him back into the centre of the stage, where he threw him sprawling full length on the stone flags. The tinsel crown tumbled from Osiris' head, and the plaits of dark hair fell to his shoulders as he lay in a spreading puddle of his own blood. "Please spare me," Osiris shrieked, as Seth stood over him, and Seth laughed. It was a full-throated roar of genuine amusement. Rasfer had become Seth, and Seth was hugely enjoying himself. That savage laughter woke the audience from its trance. However, the illusion was complete. They no longer believed that they were watching a play, and for all of them this terrible spectacle had become reality. Women screamed and men roared with fury as they witnessed the murder of their god. "Spare him! Spare the great god Osiris!" they howled. but not one of them rose from his seat or rushed onto the stage to attempt to prevent the tragedy from being played out. They knew that the struggles and passions of the gods were beyond the influence of mortal men. Osiris reached up and pawed at Seth's legs with his one remaining hand. Still laughing, Seth grabbed his wrist and pulled his arm out to its full length, inspecting it as a butcher might inspect the shoulder of a goat before he sections it. "Cut it off!" screamed a voice in the crowd, thick with the lust for blood. The mood had swung again. "Kill him!" screamed another. It has always troubled me how the sight of blood and violent death affects even the mildest of men. Even I was stirred by this terrible scene, sickened and horrified, it is true, but beneath it stirred by a revolting excitement. With a casual sweep of the blade, Seth struck off the arm, and Osiris fell back, leaving the twitching limb in Seth's red fist. He was trying to rise to his feet, but he had no hands to support himself. His legs kicked spasmodically, and his head whipped from side to side, and still he screamed. I tried to force myself to turn away, but though my gorge rose and scalded the back of my throat, still I had to watch. Seth hacked the arm into three pieces, through the joint of the wrist and the elbow. One at a time he hurled the fragments into the packed ranks of the audience. As they spun through the air, they sprinkled those below with drops of ruby. They roared like the lions in Pharaoh's zoo at feeding time and held up their hands to catch these holy relics of their god. Seth worked on with dedicated gusto. Osiris' feet he chopped off at the ankles, then the calves at the knees, and the thighs at the hip joints. As he threw each of them to them, the mob clamoured for more. "The talisman of Seth!" howled a voice amongst them. "Give us the talisman of Seth!" And the cry was taken up. According to the myth, the talisman is the most powerful of all the magical charms. The person who has it in his possession controls all the dark forces of the underworld. It is the only one of the 14 segments of Osiris' body that was never recovered by Isis and her sister Nephthys from the far corners of the earth to which Seth scattered them. The talisman of Seth is that same part of the body that Rasfa deprived me of, and which forms the centerpiece of that beautiful necklace that was the cynical gift of my lord Intef. "Give us the talisman of Seth!" the mob howled, and Seth reached down and lifted the red sodden tunic of the limbless trunk at his feet. He was still laughing. I shuddered as I recognized that merciless sound that I had heard so often at my own punishment sessions. In sympathy I experienced once again the sudden fire in my groin as the short sword flashed in Seth's hairy paw, already wet and running with his victim's blood, and he lifted on high the piteous relic. The crowd pleaded for it. "Give it to us," they begged him. "Give us the power of the talisman." The spectacle had transformed them into ravening beasts. Seth ignored their pleas. "A gift," he cried, "a gift from one god to another. I, Seth, god of darkness, dedicate this talisman to the god Pharaoh Mamoza the Divine." And he hopped down the stone stairs on those powerful bow legs and placed the relic at Pharaoh's feet. To my amazement, the king leaned forward and gathered it up to himself. His expression beneath the powder and paint was spellbound, as though this was the true relic of the god. I am sure that at that moment he truly believed it was. He held it in his right hand through all that ensued. His gift accepted, Seth rushed back onto the stage to complete his butchery. The thing that haunts me still is that the poor dismembered creature was alive and sensate to the very end. I realized that the drug I had given Todd had done little to dull his senses. I saw the terrible agony in his eyes as he lay in the lake of his own blood and rolled his head from side to side, the only part that remained to him to move. For me, then, it came as an intense relief when at last Seth struck off the head and held it up by its thick plaited locks for the crowd to admire. Even then, the poor creature's eyes swiveled wildly in their sockets as he looked for the very last time on this world. At last they dulled and glazed over, and Seth tossed the head to them. Thus the first act of our pageant ended in swelling and rapturous applause that threatened to shake the granite pillars of the temple from their bases.